Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. I am also a broker here at StoneX. We work in the hedge and spec space. End users, producers, ag markets, energies, livestock, anything in the futures and options markets. We also do a lot of OTC, structured finance, and cash consulting. If you have any questions for me, feel free to reach out, 312-706-7610. You can also find me at craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client and you like what you're here or you need to make any adjustments, please give me a call and reach out. If you're not a client, have interest in working with us also, would love to hear from you. So let's jump into it. Oh, one last thing. If you like the podcast, feel free to forward it on. It is free. It is how we reach people. It's part of our how a lot of people find us. And if you like it, please give us a review on iTunes. And finally, the newsletter you can find at turnerstake.com. So let's get into it. We've got the jobs number came out today. It is Friday at the end of the week. Let's review the week and what we think is likely to see next week. So non-farm payrolls increased by about 194,000 workers in September. Unemployment rate came down to 4.8%. Economists were looking for an expected job of about 500,000 or maybe a little less than half a million, and the unemployment rate to go to 5.1%. So the jobs number was off by about 300,000, which is a pretty big miss, but the unemployment rate was better. Now, how does that happen? It's just because more people are not looking for work, or in the labor market, or the labor statistics don't count you as unemployed if you've stopped looking for work. So I don't know if that means they go into unemployment or they've just given up finding a job, but that's how that works. What was good for the economy is it looks like they revised the August jobs. They always came in at 235. Last month, 235,000, then revised it up over 100,000 to 366. So while the miss, there was a 300,000 miss in September, there is better than 100,000 revision upward for August. Let's just call unemployment rate close to 5%. Looks like it's 4.8, and that's where we go. Market's taking it well. Normally in a vacuum, or as economists like to say, if all other things were held equal, we'd be lower. But you know, the bigger story of the week and going forward here is the debt ceiling. Congress has kicked the can down the road and agreed on a temporary increase in the debt ceiling to get them through, I guess, until like the first week of December. We'll see what Congress wants to do at that point. That ceiling is going to be an issue again, but there's no default. Congress now has 2 months to figure out what they need to do. If I'm going to guess, they just wait until the last minute again, right? I mean, that's how it seems like it goes, not just this time around, but in years past too, regardless of who's in control. And then we'll see what happens. I think, at the end of the day, you have to increase whatever party's in power wants to increase the debt limit, whatever party's not in power doesn't want to. And at the end of the day, they kind of all have to do it. Otherwise, you create a default and no one wants that or to be to blame for that. So I don't know how they fix this. It does seem like it's always any kind of dips that are caused by it seem to be a good dip to get into, but I don't know. It's one of these days it's not going to work, but it seems for now, it seems like it's going fine. So we'll see what happens December. Anyways, that's the overriding part here, the decline we had because of the debt ceiling, that is now prices are going back up to where it started declining to from the top there, and no one cares about the jobs number. So that's where we are on the macro land. Interest rates are coming down, and that really has more to do with the debt ceiling. Stocks are up. We'll see what happens in a couple of months. Energy has been higher. That's been a continues to be an interesting story. Natural gas and crude remained elevated. Front month of crude, November crude today, up above $80. That hasn't happened in years. You know, natural gas is was around six. Now we're at or six and a half. Now we're just below six in the high fives. Here's the thing with natural gas. We were like $2, $3, $4 a, you know, $2 or $3 a year ago, then got basically went through four and into five and hit six pretty fast. You know, when we go from a when a market goes from oversupply into tight supply, kind of like how soybeans and corn acted last year, you know, corn went pretty fast from three to five, you know, from the threes to the fives. Soybeans went pretty fast from the eights to like the 11 and 12s. And then they hung out for a while and consolidated to see what the summer would bring and the spread like acres and yield and all that and demand. Natural gas, it's it feels like is now in that consolidation mode where we were in the $2 and $3. We market realized we're going from an oversupply to an undersupplied market. And we run up to the $5-6 range. We probably trade in this big range in the fives and the sixes for a while until we see what happens. And what I mean by that is, do these high prices now create supply and injections? Because the injections yesterday on the energy report were much bigger than we were expecting. Now, it doesn't create, doesn't solve all problems immediately, but is this just a one-off or is it a trend? I would think we would start seeing bigger injections coming in for natural gas. There's still going to be a tightness in Europe and around the world and even in the United States. And then it's going to come down to how long winter will be, you know, in terms of how cold, how long will it be cold, and then how cold does it get? Like, do we get these Arctic blasts that we had a couple of years ago that, you know, make January and February just seem frigid? Or is it a mild winter? And that's going to have a lot of impact on natural gas too. So I do think we're elevated for a while and fives and sixes make sense for gas. When we, you know, and then do we go higher than that between now and March is going to be just dependent on really the weather, how cold it gets and for how long until supply can eventually catch up with demand, which a lot of the analysts out there, and I tend to agree with them, probably won't see the market be able to catch up with, you know, with demand until the spring. And that's, you know, similar to crop cycles too. You know, you have elevated prices until you can get to next harvest. While natural gas is continually produced, we probably don't catch up, supplies and catch up with demand until we get into another shoulder month situation, which would be the spring. So that's where we are with natural gas. I still like it. I do think we're going to consolidate for a while. There's probably more upside potential. It's definitely more upside potential and downside potential right now. Getting into the spring, that's a little bit different. But that's six. That's 5-6 months away. We're just getting started in the fall here. So I would, if you have energy, if you have to hedge energy costs, I would look at. I'd probably look at calls, futures, buying puts. Buying futures and selling, maybe buying futures and buying puts, or maybe buying a call and selling a put spread to help pay for that. Those kind of things, and that could be in heating oil, that can be in crude, that could be in natural gas. I even like it for a spec play. If you want to take a spec position on some of these things, I would. And if you're going to do it, I would wait for a down day to do it. We just got a big one in natural gas. If we're going to do it for crude, I'd probably wait for a big sell off in crude. When you get bull markets like this, there's an old saying, they always let you in. So, I mean, natural gas at one point hit 650 and went back down to 570. So maybe that's the middle of the range. Maybe it's 5 to 650 now. We'll just have to see. With crude hitting 80, you'd think they'd re-pull back into the mid 70s at some point. And then what's the target for crude? You know, a lot of investment, but you know, there are banks out there and analysts thinking crude go to 90, given the right conditions. So are we at a 70 to 90, you know, are we now, is crude now back into this? I mean, if you remember when crude was $100 and we had a shortage, you know, crude traded in that $80 to $100 range for a long time. I don't know if we're back there yet, but a 65 to 90 range, for the winter when natural gas is tight and we've got other production issues, which, by the way, I guess I should have brought this up in the macro markets. I mean, a couple of reasons for the inflation, in food and energy, you know, it's, there are shortages, right? And there, and demand is coming back. We had shortages because we lowered production during COVID, right? And because A, demand was lower, but B, this, not every, you know, we weren't operating at full capacity. A lot of people are home, a lot of things shut down. So not only was demand lower, production was lower, and quite honestly, the work participation because of the shutdowns and everyone being home was lower too. Now we're coming into a period where demand is back on the rise. Like things are getting back to normal. We are seeing economic growth. We are seeing wage growth. We are seeing inflation growth. There's a lot going on, and what's happening is we kind of chewed through supplies during the shutdowns, and now we just can't get production ramped up enough. And we got supply chain issues, and we got shipping issues, and all these things get sorted out eventually, but it's not at a snap of a finger. It does take a little bit of time. So I just saw that shipping rates in China are starting to come down. The Baltic Dry Index is up, which is kind of the global shipping rate barometer that we use, but we did see shipping rates start to come down in China. So that's, and quite significantly. So maybe we're hitting the top on that, or, you know, again, high prices cure high prices. Either, you know, you either stop buying them or someone finds a way to create more supply, right? Either completely ration demand and prices come down, or someone figures out a way to make more supply and then prices come down. So I think that's when you start to be seeing that in the shipping and the supply chain too. But that has a lot to do with energy also for the next 6 months. And I do think same thing with crude, like OPEC eventually will produce more. You will see more production come out of non-OPEC countries too. You know, and I'll get into biodiesel when we talk about grains a lot, but there's also, you got to remember, you know, the world does want to get to have cleaner energy, green energy, clean energy. Pollution is a big deal among businesses and, you know, politicians and governments, right? So if there is going to be a move away from coal, you have to have a major energy source to take the place of that. There's been a reluctance to move from coal to petroleum because petroleum isn't looked as a clean energy. Natural gas is the fossil fuel that does seem to be viewed as the cleanest energy of the, you know, between coal, crude and natural gas. So we are seeing a higher demand for natural gas because of that. I don't know if we're going to switch back to coal. In a pure economic sense, you might, but there's also a lot of regulation now and initiatives from different nations about their energy policies, including China and Western Europe and the United States. You know, that just doesn't stop on a dime. And then you also see this move to biodiesel, where, you know, during the renewable fuel standards from 2006 and 2007, we had corn going to ethanol. Now we're having vegetable oil going into renewable biodiesel. And that's caused, I guess we'll switch over to grains now. That has caused, I think, palm oil to hit again all-time highs overnight this week. Canola is bumping up against all-time highs. We're seeing soybean oil on the rise again. I haven't checked the sunflower market recently. That's usually got it. It's really more of a European market, but, you know, it has been high too. I don't think they're at all-time highs, but that has been high too. And we're using it. There's a story out of, I want to say, Indonesia, that they started testing palm oil and jet fuel. So this is a big deal. And also too, with vegetable oil, there's there's not just an energy component, but obviously there is a food component to it, and it's very inelastic. I mean, the demand for vegetable oil seems to grow steadily year over year, regardless of production. So, and you see that sometimes with meal too, like, or feed. Like, feed will be, as long as it's available, people will buy it. So, regardless of the price. So, what does that mean for some of these markets? Well, one, in the feed, let's talk about feed and that vegetable oil issue centers around what happened with the canola crop, the tight supplies from Malaysian palm oil, and we need to have basically soybean oil make up for that. Now, we have had drought in Canada and in the Northern Plains. Not only has that affected the canola crop, it's also affected the oat crop. So it's interesting what's going on here is we've got a vegetable oil story, we've got an energy story. We also have a feed grain story, especially up north with the oats. Like, oats are now $6 or over $6. They're a dollar over corn. Both are records. I don't think, I mean, I can't remember oats being much over five. And where are we right now? It's six, give you a live quote, 6:29. Trading over 6:30 a little bit earlier today. And the fact that, I mean, corn, one point oats were a dollar over corn. I don't remember oats being over corn. The record from a cup, I mean, I think the all-time record was like, I don't know, 15, 20 cents over, and now we're a full dollar over. Oats is a commercial market. You don't see a lot of spec trading in it. You don't see a lot of volume in it because it's mostly commercials and end users. And the people that we talk to in the oat market really don't see any sign of the demand rationing at these prices yet. I don't know what the substitute for oats would be. And when you think about where it's produced, the barley crop was hurt up in the Northern Plains and in Canada. The canola crop was hurt up there. The oat crop was up there. The spring wheat was hurt up there. Canada went, their production is down, going to be down about 35% overall for the grain markets. And the biggest hit was that area of Canada between like Calgary and Manitoba. Basically, if you just look at a map of the Northern Plains of the United States and you just look north of Canada, it's that area, Saskatchewan and Alberta and all in there. So I think going forward, oat stays high. It's going to help corn. Wheat is going to stay high. That's still going to be in the sevens for Chicago wheat. Soybean oil is going to stay elevated. Most interesting about soybean oil is soybean oil may be what keeps beans up. Another interesting story that's developing the grain markets is what happens to meal. If vegetable oil is higher, if soybean oil is high, even if yields for soybeans go up, which based on my conversations in the country, it sounds like they are. It sounds like bean yields are coming up and corn yields are going down. Not a ton, but enough to make some interest, changes that are worth noting in coming WASDEs and supply and demand. But what's going to be interesting is you're going to have these crush margins and this demand for oil. And if we're crushing oil for beans, if we're crushing beans for oil, what does that mean for soybean meal? I mean, could soybean meal break below 300 again, like it did when we had, tariffs and swine fever? Even with soybeans at $12, can meal go below 300? I mean, if we're just crushing oil, crushing beans for oil because of the new initiative for biodiesel, and the tightness around the world, maybe the U.S. stops exporting as many soybeans and starts to export more meal, kind of like how our, you look at South America, Brazil exports soybeans, Argentina does the crush and exports meal and oil. They prefer to do the crush internally and then send it out. Brazil just sends the whole soybean and the buyer, the soybean, does the crush domestically. That's actually what China likes to do. China likes to buy the bean and does the crush locally. So the United States has always been the same. As just like Brazil, they just ship out the soybean. If oil become what's an interesting trend that could happen here is if vegetable oil for renewable biodiesel is the new, you know, corn for ethanol, not just the United States, but, you know, around the world, I think what you're going to end up seeing is we will start crushing beans for oil, keeping the oil, more of the oil here, and then exporting the meal. And we'll see less soybean exports as the whole bean, and we'll see more exports of soybean meal. That's going to be interesting. That doesn't happen at a snap of the finger either, you know, with logistics and shipping. But it seems like that's the road we're going down. See if the USDA comments on that and how long that happens. But just another interesting trend in the grain markets that I think we got to be aware of, and how it can be continue to be supportive of bean oil and oil share. So going forward here, we have a couple things. At the WASD next week, I do think we're going to inch the corn yields down. And this is just based on conversations I have with farmers throughout the Midwest. I do think soybean yields go up. Some of the yields in soybeans have been very good and pretty much across the board. So it sounds like soybeans are going to be higher. Corn's going to be lower. I would expect the corn, new crop soybean to corn ratio is around 2.3. That could go to 2.2 or 2.5. I really wouldn't be surprised on that. What keeps soybeans from going below 12 is probably soybean oil and just the tightness in that market. And then for corn to break out to the upside, we're going to have to see strong demand. We are seeing exports come back to the Gulf. We'll see who needs corn here over the next couple of weeks. We are lagging behind on sales, so we do need to see some export activity there. So kind of got a bullish bias on corn, or at least a very limited downside. I don't see any reason why corn goes below $5. I don't see why soybeans goes below 12, even if the balance sheet expands, just because of soybean oil. I am concerned about meal and how that could break while the market figures out what to do with it. I think natural gas is going to trade in range now, but in a big range. I used to talk about last summer how soybeans were going to trade in range. The range was $12 to $15. I can see natural gas trading in a $5 to $6.50 range now for a while until the market figures out where we're going to go. I can also see crude trading in a $65 to $90 range as things get tighter globally. Finally, just on the macro front, the debt ceiling will become an issue again in 2 months. So be careful about that. But for now, interest rates are easing up. Stocks are going higher. The market doesn't care about it. They're shrugging off a bad jobs report. And we'll just keep on going until we got to revisit the situation again in 2 months. So that is I think that's the game plan for now. That's the status of the market. I'm going to go into the report here next week. As always, just kind of getting rid of any kind of risk. I don't mind having some upside exposure or looking for some upside in corn, maybe some downside in the soybeans. And I still like bean oil and natural gas. So if you have any questions, let me know. Oh, last one. I almost forgot this. Fertilizer. Fertilizer is still a big story. I send a lot of emails on it, especially to my client list. Fertilizer is a huge component of natural gas is fertilizer. I mean, depending on the fertilizer that you're using, whether it be nitrogen or a type of ammonia, it could be 60, 70, 80% of the cost. If natural gas is this high, I'll tell you right now, natural gas goes to heating first, not fertilizer. It's just no one's going to shut off the heat in Europe or in China to produce fertilizer. So not only are fertilizer prices are going high because the natural gas prices are so high, companies either don't want to deal with the high cost of production, and a lot of times they just can't access it, so they're shutting down plants. What does that mean for acres next year is a really interesting question. a lot of fertilizer has been booked and locked in, absolutely, but not 100% of it. You know, you see estimates, and it's so hard to tell, but you see estimates like 60 to 75% of fertilizer has already been booked in. But in corn, where we're tight stocks and we're below 1.5 billion and we're banking on somewhere between 91 and 94 million acres next year, well, how do you get those fringe acres on board with A, the high cost of inputs, and two, is fertilizer going to be available? That's interesting. South America, there is also, you know, estimates where, you know, I think it's something like 70 to 80% of fertilizer is booked early, but the last 20 to 30% is booked towards the tail end, and a lot of dealers will have excess supplies, and those excess supplies aren't there. So one of two things happens in the grain markets for the new crop then. It's either you plant the acres and you don't have all the fertilizer you want, which is a detriment to yield, or you don't plant the acres, and then while the yields may stay good for everyone who did buy early and lock that in, but the acres are lower, and then production's lower in both of those scenarios. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. The market has not paid a whole lot of attention to this yet. It's too far out for the market to care a whole lot about it. There's, to be honest with you, this is an issue that pops up early in 2020, later in 21 in South America, or early 22 in the United States, I think. But for now, it's a very interesting story and something we have to keep on. It could be, you never know with these things. It could be the big story of 2022. It could be nothing. As I like to say, you know, it's like the debt crisis. It's a big story until it's solved, and then it's not a story anymore. Then you have things like COVID, which, you know, you think are going to be over in 3 weeks. To flatten the curve, and here we are. It's we're going on 18 months or longer now. So you just never know what's going to be a big story or what dies out fast. But the natural gas fertilizer one is a big one, and it has potential to have lasting effects into next year. So that is the podcast for the week. Hope everyone has a great weekend. We are open on Monday. I know it's I believe it's Columbus Day holiday. Schools are out, and there's some other, probably the commercial banks are open, and commercial banks are usually closed. Investment banks and exchanges are open. So depends who's on and off, but we are definitely open. So if you need anything, let me know. Check out the podcast or refer to anyone. You can give us a review on iTunes. That'd be great. Newsletter is turnerstake.com. And if you have any questions for me, if you're a client or you're interested in working with us, whether it be in grain, energy, livestock, futures options, OTC, cash consulting, just let us know. Thanks very much and have a great weekend.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.